Hawaii with Truth News Radio Australia, beaming out to you on the 1st of April 2014. It is a great honour, ladies and gentlemen, to bring you the show this week, and we have quite an amazing hour lined up for you. And believe me, this is not an April Fool's joke. I actually do have someone very, very important on the show, and I'm really deeply honoured that he's been able to make the time to come on today. And let me just, by way of introduction, I want to say that a lot of people, myself included, have become incredibly cynical and suspicious about anyone who's been involved in politics at a certain level. In fact, almost at any level above the grassroots level, because what we tend to find is that people become sort of systemically dishonest, and they start to adopt the talking points and memes of the power elite class, and they simply stop being people that you can relate to in any normal way. And a lot of times, it's really hard to believe that that's the case, and you go through your life hoping that that's not true. But then as you start to educate yourself and as you start to do research, you realise that these politicians are actually lying to you. They're lying to you with a calm face, with looking you in the eye, with an incredible air of sincerity, but they are completely lying to you. And that is how we just develop this deep sort of wall of cynicism towards anyone who's ever been involved in politics at a high level. But there are the rare exceptions, and my guest today is one of those incredibly rare exceptions, someone who's been at the highest level, at the highest levels of politics, and very, very close to the highest level, and one step away really from president, you might say. And his name is Jesse Ventura. So with that, may I welcome Jesse Ventura, Governor Ventura, to Truth News Radio. Are you there, sir?
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. And just a quick take from you on my introduction there. Are you familiar? This must be a problem that you've engaged with, because you have actually confronted the deceit, the level of dishonesty in the ranks of the people that you've associated with directly. What's it been like for you kind of confronting that? It must have been a really, really difficult soul-searching process.
Well, the difficulty for me is because I'm a complete independent. The problem in the United States is the two political parties, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I wrote a book about them. I called them the Democrats and the Republicans, which, of course, is kind of a satirical way of saying the Crips and the Bloods, the infamous street gangs of Los Angeles. And I made the comparison that these two political parties are identical.
Absolutely.
They operate the same ways. They just simply wear Brooks Brothers suits instead. And, you know, I've always been an independent. I have never been part of the two-party system. So subsequently, I guess that makes me a bit of an outlaw, because I won't join their political parties, because I don't believe that there should be political parties. And Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and George Washington, two of the founding fathers of the United States of America, and this concept of this republic, they agree with me, you know. So I have good allies in my favor, but it's a difficult fight. I'm a complete independent. I have nobody with me. I don't have staffs. I don't have all the stuff. People want me to run for president, but it's me and my wife and our dog. My kids are growing up now, and you know, I don't do all that, but I do sit in a position where I feel a citizen must be vigilant. And in vigilance, that means you question your government, you hold their feet to the fire. And I do that.
Yeah. And of course, when you were in a government, you were initially with a party by the name of the Reform Party, and then you actually diverged from that and became an independent. And that was after you had already become governor. Is that correct?
Well, I had been elected first as a mayor of the sixth largest city in the state of Minnesota back in 1990, Brooklyn Park, and then I served 4 years as mayor, one term. I could have been reelected easily, but I chose to go back to the private sector. I believe that's what our country was founded upon, people serving and bringing their life experiences into government, and then when you're done, go back to what you used to do. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, we've fallen victim today to the career politician. The people that get elected for 25, 30 years over and over and over again, and they've created a system of bribery where it's simply pay us off and you'll get what you want. And the frustrating thing about that is that if you do it in the private sector, you go to jail.
Yeah.
But in the public sector, it's alive and well. And then, of course, we have this horrific ruling by our justices of the Supreme Court that now have stated that corporations have the same rights as citizens. Well, to me, that's fascism. Corporations shouldn't have the same rights as citizens. How can they make a ruling like that? And now corporations are... Money is just flowing in, and they're literally buying these Democrats and Republicans the corporate power, and so that's who's running the country now.
Yeah, and it's never been more extreme than it is now. I mean, in your lifetime, do you feel, are we heading towards some sort of crescendo? And I mean, how far away from that crescendo are we? It's a question I always like to ask people on the show.
Well, you know, to me, it's our fault,
yeah.
The people of the United States,
yeah.
Because our forefathers told us we had to be vigilant. They
yeah.
told us we had to participate in the government and be active in it and pay attention to it. And we've failed to do that because we continue to elect these people. We continue to allow the two parties to dominate the system. I'm dangerous to them because I've beaten them twice.
Yeah.
I've beaten them for mayor, and then I beat them, two of their top guys for governor of the state of Minnesota, and came out of nowhere. And, you know, people, they don't talk about my election because they don't want it to happen again. I only raised $300,000 to become the governor of Minnesota. I actually made more money doing the job, my pay for 4 years, than what I spent to get it. And there's not an elected official in 50 years to any major office that can make that statement.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, one of the ways in which the system operates is to continually play off the two sort of pseudo choices that we have in our political system, the left versus the right, and to basically make a very big deal of the differences between those two wings, which are really not really that different from each other. But in your experience, have you been pegged as a right winger? I mean, I know that it's not really that important, but to me, you just seem like someone who speaks the truth and who is willing to basically investigate. But anyway, yes, please go ahead.
For me, it's a simple thing. I'm a simple, pretty simple person, always have been, and it's a simple rule I live by. If you tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
I mean, then you don't. The truth is what it is, and it will always remain so. And so, you don't need to have a good memory if you tell the truth, because you don't have to remember what you previously said. Because the truth will tell you what you previously said, and it's a simple way to live. You don't have to have a good memory then. and I'm that way when I'm in public office or when I speak politically, is that I simply tell the truth. And I remember running for governor during the debates. They allowed me in. That's why, you know, and if they won't allow you in the debates, which we haven't had a third voice in a presidential debate since 1992, you know, that's how long it's been, you know, that we've heard a third voice. And as I refer to them, like Ralph Nader, the two-party dictatorship. And getting back to what you spoke of earlier,
yeah.
They are working together. Don't kid yourself.
Yeah.
They're both bought and paid for by the same corporate money people, and it's like a sporting event that allows gambling. If you bet on both participants, you can't lose, can you?
Absolutely, yeah. And
that's what they do. That's what the system we have. They're both paid off by the same special interest people. So when you saw George Bush leave office and Barack Obama come in on this sweeping thing of change,
yeah.
There's been no change. There's been no change whatsoever in the United States policies. They're all the same. I can't tell the difference. And if people aren't clear to that by now, then they're a bunch of blithering idiots.
Certainly seems that way to me. And, of course, we have very, very similar patterns in Australia. Australia tends to sort of actually follow the political ups and downs of the US. But we have a very, very similar system and a very, very similar set of false choices in Australia. Yeah.
Well, for me, I sit in the middle. I'm called one of these centrists, I guess. I'm fiscally conservative. Yeah. I want less government and less government involvement in my life.
Yeah.
But I'm socially liberal.
Right.
I don't care if gay people get married. It's none of my business if they do. You know, that's their business. Government has no place in that. You know, what's government doing in the business of love?
Exactly.
You know, that's not in our Constitution where it says government's supposed to be involved in that. They have no place in it whatsoever. Their job is to treat everyone equally, equal under the law. And that's the way they need to treat it. And we also, they were very clear there's to be a separation of church and state. Don't bring your religious beliefs into government, you know, because government has to be all-encompassing. It has to have room for everybody.
Yeah.
And but if you go back and look, there's no difference. I'll tell you a thing I talked about on my show. I'm on the internet now with Off the Grid, if people in Australia are interested.
Sure, great show.
TV.
Yeah, I had a look at it today. And, it's a really interesting show.
One of the things I brought up on my show, how could George Bush and Barack Obama go to the funeral of Nelson Mandela and show their faces?
Yeah. Yeah.
After they have Guantanamo Bay, we torture people and hold them without trials exactly like they have done, that Nelson Mandela had done to him. How could they possibly? I couldn't have. If I had Guantanamo running and I would have Abu Ghraib and all that crap that went on in that war, if I would have been the head, I could have never shown my face at Nelson Mandela's funeral.
It is incredible, and the cavalier attitude that that Obama had at that event. There were photographs leaked of him sitting around taking snapshots with other people, just having a good laugh.
To me, I don't care about that as much as I do the philosophical and how dare him and Bush.
Yeah,
you know, Bush destroyed my belief in America. He invaded another country that didn't do a thing to us, overthrew their government, and occupied them.
Yeah. And, of course, there's...
That is not supposed to be the United States of America, the United States that I grew up in and believe in.
And, of course, there's been continued leaks of the absolutely shocking, horrifying human rights abuses that took place in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's still coming out about the rape and the abuse of prisoners, which just, I mean, really are incredible. And I'd like to ask you a bit more about that when we come back from break. With Truth News Radio Australia, I'm talking to Governor Jesse Ventura. Really great show, folks. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. With Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to my guest today, Jesse Ventura, former Navy SEAL, former wrestling champion, former governor of Minnesota, and now an activist on the front line of the info war, engaged in a much more difficult struggle, and one which we're all engaged in, and everyone doing a show, whether it's this podcast that you're listening to today or Governor Ventura doing his show, there are so many people all around the world now engaged in this struggle, and it's great to be able to hook up and just connect. And I think it's very, very important to express the solidarity that we all have around the world, because the problems that we're facing and the problems that that you're facing in the US, Jesse, are paralleled in Australia and, of course, in many other Western pseudo-democracies, as I like to call them. We're going through some kind of millennial struggle for civilization, aren't we?
Well, it almost appears we are. You know, it's getting back to that old thing, the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
And because in the United States, the thing that made the United States the great nation it was and is still is the middle class. The United States had a wonderful, what you'd call, middle class, where you could go and get a job, and you could earn money, and you could have a family, and you could live a comfortable life.
Yeah.
Well, that's being destroyed because of the separation of pay now. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer, and it's at an obscene rate. You know, the rich, the ultra-rich, are so ultra-rich. I said on my show, I think it's a sickness.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
you get that rich in a way. And I'll explain. I play golf. I love the game of golf. And I'm addicted to golf. And I have a sickness when I play golf. Me and my friends, we call it ball hawking.
Right.
That means when I go play golf, I can't help myself. I have to try to find errant golf balls when I'm out there.
Okay.
I have a standard rule that I want more golf balls when I end the round than what I did when I started it. And it's like a sickness. It's not part of the game, but I incorporate it into my game. I think being ultra-wealthy has the same sickness.
Yeah.
How much money do people need? When you're worth billions of dollars, why do you need a raise next year while your employees maybe take a pay cut?
Yeah.
I just can't fathom that. I don't know how people sleep at night knowing that. You know, when you have that kind of money, if you're worth $1 billion, you're never going to spend that in your lifetime. You couldn't. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, look,
and,
absolutely.
And yet they want, if you have $1 billion, they quest for $2 billion.
I've got a theory about it based on my understanding of human nature and psychology, is that once your struggle to satisfy your basic needs is met, and you then have more wealth than you can ever possibly spend in a normal way, it seems that these people become obsessed in finding ways to express their power and domination of humanity, and they often take it upon themselves that they have the mantle of being like the almost like the godlike figures over the planet. And it's very interesting to me that we see this coming together of the ultra elite, the ultra rich, with environmental movements which actually have one of their key goals as being reducing global population. But the sense that these people have that they actually own the planet because they have so much wealth, and that really it's a livestock management process for them, and I think they also get off on the power of that. I don't know, what do you think about that?
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm choosing to live off the grid right now with my show. I legitimately am off the grid. I live where there's no electricity. I live where there's no paved roads. But in today's technology, or a TV, I told them that, and they said, that's not a problem. We have the technology. We can reach the satellite. We can do the show. And so we continue to do the show. But that's one of the reasons I choose to live off the grid, is to break away from what's going on out there in the stranglehold that seems to be happening. And it makes for me, and with the point I'm getting to, living off the grid has nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
The people that I live amongst are some of the poorest there are, and yet they're some of the happiest. And the message I'm trying to tell people as much as I can is that as great as money is, it's an old saying, sometimes money can't replace happiness.
Yeah.
And a lifestyle many times is worth more than money. And that's the lifestyle of living off the grid. I mean, people surf, people do all sorts of different things, and they're real things, and they're not a quest for money. The people that I'm around on a daily basis now, they don't give a damn what the stock market's doing. They're more worried about what are we eating tomorrow night. You know, what's for dinner tonight or whatever it may be. It's more of a survival type day-to-day mode, but it makes you, I think, in many ways a better person. And that's why I choose to live and do it. I have my dream job now. I'm living the life that I really love. And I'm actually, you know, I have a show and I'm able to work while doing it and cause a lot of trouble back in the United States, I hope.
Absolutely.
What I mean by that is of awakening people up and getting them to pay attention.
Well, I know you you stirred up a lot of trouble about the TSA, and the last I heard, you had refused to fly in the US. What's your current position on that now? Because I know there was a court case, and I didn't quite find out what happened there.
Well, yeah, I refuse to fly. I have metal in my body.
Yeah.
I'm an honorably discharged Navy veteran. I've been a mayor. I've been a governor. But because I have metal in my body, when I go through the metal detector, it's going to go off.
Yeah.
Well, from that point on, I'm treated like a criminal.
Okay. Okay.
And when I was flying a great deal, I was getting angrier and angrier, and I couldn't figure out why. And then one day it came to me, and I turned to my wife. I said, you know what? I said, I'm getting angry because I'm getting comfortable being patted down. And my belief in a free country, you should never feel comfortable being patted down.
Yeah.
And I was flying, I flew so much, I was getting patted down sometimes multiple times every day. And I finally said enough. And when they went to this stuff where it became a sexual assault,
yeah.
I then went to my attorneys. I said, I want to sue. We determined that the best thing was the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, which has the key word reasonable search and seizure. We sued under the premise that it is not reasonable to believe Jesse Ventura is a threat. He's been a governor, he's been a mayor, he's been flying for 30 years, he's an honorably discharged United States Navy veteran. He poses no threat. Well, it got in front of the federal judge, and she threw it out of court, ruling that she didn't have jurisdiction.
Wow.
My attorneys and I are astounded to this day how a federal judge can claim not to have jurisdiction over a Fourth Amendment constitutional question.
Yeah.
Excuse me, and then we've learned that that's what they do with every case. You cannot sue Homeland Security or the TSA for anything because the judicial system will merely throw it out of court. So people need to understand when you fly in the United States of America, you are not protected by the Constitution or Bill of Rights. They can do anything they want to you, and there's no place you can go to seek redress. It was interesting. During my hearing, the federal judge said to me, Governor, can you cite a time that you were abused at the airport? And my attorney stepped in and said, no, the governor can't do that because he's not allowed to know the rules. They fall under national security. Now, can you imagine that in a free country, we're not even allowed to know what they can or can't do to you at an airport?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just then put my foot and said, fine, I quit flying. I will never fly again. And I haven't flown since. And I make no bones about it. I now take the train or I drive. I'm not going to break them, but there is a movement among some Americans who have ceased to fly for the same reasons as I have. I probably flew to the tune of at least $20,000 to $25,000 a year.
Incredible. We're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break. Are you with Truth News Radio Australia? I'm talking to Jesse Ventura. We'll be right back after this very short break. Do stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And my guest today is Jesse Ventura, who, on top of a very illustrious career that spans many, many decades doing quite diverse things, is now the host of a very interesting show called Off the Grid, which I had a chance to look at today. And it's more of an interview format show, a little different to the previous conspiracy theory series. And I have to say, I really like the format of your new show, Jesse. It's relaxed, and you get guests on, and you kind of do the same thing we're doing here now. You basically have a chat about things that are important.
Well, yeah, but it's not also interviews. I had to be clear with them on that, you know.
Right.
I'm not necessarily, interviewing isn't my forte. I'm better being interviewed.
Indeed.
When I am interviewing. Larry King, to me, is the best interview man on the planet, and I'm not Larry King. I need to be opposite Larry King. Larry needs to talk to me. So that's why the format is where I have the command thing with Alex back in the United States, because I need Alex to feed me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm that shark that's swimming around in the water, and somebody got to feed the shark.
yeah, just a small morsel of just a thought is enough to move us on to another topic, and that's great, because I mean you've had such different experiences, and actually I want to feed you a couple of morsels, because one question I wanted to ask you is about your early background in the Navy, because you were in the defense forces during the height of the Vietnam War, and I just was wondering, you know, what your perspective on the whole thing was then, and how it changed, how it evolved to become the person you are today.
Well, the problem, you know, I did the show Conspiracy Theories because, I'll back up a little, because
yeah.
I've always questioned the murder of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And John F. Kennedy, had he lived, I firmly believe, all indications and research I've done, there would never have been the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Had John Kennedy lived. So going on that premise, I thought, why did this war take place? And clearly, there was a movement to go to war. I now am a firm believer, and I follow the teachings of Major General Smedley Butler, a two-time Congressional Medal of Honor Marine, who wrote the book War is a Racket. It's the most anti-war book that's ever been written. It's a phenomenal book. Smedley wrote it about 100 years ago, or now 90 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
But it's so applicable even to today, because war is a racket.
And he is
war
truly
is
one of the great heroes.
War is nothing about people making money. That's all it's about. It's driven by money, no matter what the war is. Like this current mess over in Russia, it's all about the natural gas.
Yeah.
It's about money. Ultimately, they try to make it look all the time it's about governing and about philosophical governing principles like communism or capitalism or whatever it might be, hogwash.
Yeah.
It's about money. All these wars are thought about money, and that's my perception today of the Vietnam War. It's tragic. It should have never happened. 58,000 of my generation in the United States were killed. Untold millions were killed in Vietnam. And what was accomplished? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Ultimately, nothing. That we were lied to. They told us we were there to fight the domino effect of communism. That if we didn't stop it in Asia, that it would come down into New Zealand, Australia, and up through South America, eventually into Mexico, and that pretty soon the United States would be on an island by itself. What a bunch of hogwash.
Absolutely.
When you look at it today.
Absolutely.
And then out of it, what it's also part of this hogwash of the Cold War, which they're trying to take us back to now.
Yeah.
They're trying to reverse us and get the Cold War going again.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? I mean, it seems like they're just kind of digging up some old rhetoric almost and just brushing it off.
What gets me is we got these TV announcers in the United States that they have this gang mentality that if Russia disses us, you know, if Russia says something bad about us, that we should immediately have to respond, immediately retaliate, or it's a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
I burst out laughing. I go, the United States has the capability of what, blowing up the world 100 times over? We have the largest military on the planet. We spend more on defense than the other 25 nations combined, and they're all supposed to be our allies. Why do we have to show our muscle if someone shows disrespect to us?
Yeah.
As the leader of the world, we should shrug it off and laugh.
And it's already been proven so many times over that it is an impossible course of action. Mutual assured destruction is still in place, so it can't happen.
I'm 62 years old now. I was born in 1951, post-World War II. My mother and father were both World War II veterans. Yeah. My brother and I are both Vietnam veterans. Everyone in my family has served in the military.
Yeah.
And since my 51, I have not seen one war the United States has been involved in that I can actually say, gee, that was a good one.
Yeah.
We did the right thing there. Not one of them. Not one of them achieved any good. And it goes back. Are you familiar with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty?
I have looked at some of the material about him. Yes, really, really important guy.
People need to read L. Fletcher Prouty, because he will tell you this is all by design.
Yeah.
That after World War II, there was a meeting amongst the power brokers, England, Russia, us, and I forget who the other was. China.
Yeah.
And that they determined all wars from then on would be fought in third world countries, and there'd be no direct objective a military could do to achieve victory.
Right.
Because after we dropped the nuclear bombs, they realized that if there's a world war, it could be the destruction of the Earth.
Yeah.
And that even puts them in danger. And they don't want to be in danger. So they made a determination that our wars would be fought in third world countries. Well, I have to give Prouty his due. People may say he's wrong, but history says he's right, because every war since then has been exactly what he said they'd be.
It seems true, and it seems America only ever attacks vastly weaker countries, countries that are practically in disarray, almost failed states. And yet,
to me, it's because they have to keep fueling this military-industrial war machine.
Yeah.
It's a gigantic machine that requires gasoline.
Yeah.
And in order to have gasoline, you got to have the gasoline is war. They need to keep producing wars throughout the world so that they can keep these military jobs going. You know, I find it astonishing that we as human beings, we have no predator. Nobody eats us. We're at the top of the food chain, and yet we are so stupid, because we have no predator, we decide to prey on each other.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it just astounds me that we create these wars to kill each other, and you go, why? You know?
It seems that we become predators. Well, the elites become predators against the rest of humanity, and we become their prey, essentially.
It's the old saying, we're our own worst enemy.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing
else is, we are, you know, I don't know, to me, I'm 62 years old now, and I've gotten to the point where virtually hardly anything to me justifies war. War, people need to realize, war is the result of failed politics. It's when politicians fail miserably that you have war. Never blame the warrior. Do not blame the military person. The military person is a victim also, because they've taken an oath, and they will carry out that oath. The blame doesn't go on the military person. The blame goes on the politicians that send them.
But then, of course, there's this culture of dehumanization within the armed forces itself, which turns these people often into quite psychopathic entities that engage in atrocities.
Having been there and done that, you know, I served at age 18, and I went into the Navy Underwater Demolition SEAL team, which is the most rigorous training, I think, in all of the military that you can go into, but I was a former competitive swimmer.
We're just going to break. Sorry, Jesse.
Well, I'm a former competitive swimmer, which you Aussies will relate to. You know, swimming is a major sport in Australia.
We're going to break you with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. Back here with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Jesse Ventura. And sorry, you were just cut off there, and we were talking about your background there. And could you just finish the thought? As it was very interesting what you were just saying there, Jesse.
Sure. What I'm saying is what Australians can relate to. I was a former competitive swimmer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, swimming is a much more national sport, actually, in Australia than it even is in America, even though we've had Michael Phelps and Mark Spitz and all of that, you know, and you've had some great ones, Ian Thorpe, and, you know, some of the phenomenal swimmers of down through the years. Well, so there was a natural progression for me. I wanted to be a frog man. You know, that I go in the military, utilize your swimming capabilities, and the best way you can do that is to be a frog man.
And you did it, and you were in that profession for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, well, actually, it's a 6-year commitment. I did 4 years on active duty and 2 years in the reserve.
Right, right. And that's a very, very elite unit there. And I was doing a bit of reading up on the Navy SEALs, and I know there's been some dispute about whether you're in fact a Navy SEAL. And I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter to me, but you know what people are like on the internet. They're always trying to find ways to attack people.
Well, let me put it this way for any of the disputers that are out there. The underwater demolition and SEAL team were completely interchangeable.
Yeah.
When I went in, there was both teams were there. In fact, you had 3 teams of UDT on the West Coast and only 1 SEAL team. And when you came out of training, you had no say-so. You all go through the same training. It's called BUDS, Basic Underwater Demolition / SEAL. That's what BUDS stands for. Now, you got to go where the bullets are open. And the instructors in later years told me the best swimmers were always sent to the UDT teams.
Yes.
Well, I was one of the better swimmers. They're going to send you where you can, where they can use your capabilities the best. And I was a pretty powerful swimmer. And so naturally, they would send me to a UDT team, but I went through SEAL cadre. When I went to the reserves, I got attached to SEAL team reserve unit. There is no difference. People that bring that up are just nitpicking idiots, because then in the 80s they decommissioned all the UDT teams, and I believe my team today would be SEAL team 5.
Right.
Because they changed the name. That's all they did. They simply changed the name. You know, we're all out of the same training. We all go through the same thing, and we're all interchangeable. You just go where you don't have a choice where the Navy tells you to go.
Absolutely. Can I just throw you a quick question while we're on the subject of Navy SEALs? What is your take on Osama bin Laden and the Navy SEAL team that took him out, and then the sudden death of many of those people in an accident in Afghanistan shortly afterwards?
You know, first of all, I won't comment on anything that they do operationally on the ground, because I'm not there.
Yeah.
What am I going to comment on? I don't know what went down. I only hear the reports from the news media.
Yeah.
And today, how do you know those are true? You
Indeed.
Don't know. And so I don't question what went down on the ground. The mysterious deaths later, I don't know. You know, again, I don't have intel and information. I'm not privy to it. So I would prefer not to discuss it or talk about it, because I don't like to just speculate on stuff I don't know about or have any direct information, and I do not have any direct information any more than anybody else, just that many of them died tragically, and unfortunately that's a price you pay in war, and they're the big warriors. They're going to do the jobs that are most difficult, and they go do the ones that have the most danger, you know, and they're wonderful people who volunteer to do this. And I being one of them from days gone past, you volunteer to do this. Nobody makes you go into Bub's training. It's a volunteer unit, basic underwater demolition. You have to volunteer and want to be there. So they're highly motivated individuals who protect our country and do a hell of a job doing it.
But perhaps one thing we can agree on is that the PR aspects of the capture and then quick dispatch of Osama bin Laden were certainly incredibly well managed, weren't they? It was staged managed for incredible sort of TV effect.
Well, I don't know about that. I can only relate to when I was in. And when I was in, you practice, you practice, you practice, you practice, you practice. How many times can I say that? Because you want it to be, it's like a golf swing. You want it to become body mechanics to where you know what you're going to do and you don't have to think about it because you've trained so much. You allow your training to take over and you trust your training.
Right, yes. Yeah. So that it would have been a team acting with incredible precision as we're told it was. So, yes, I mean, we on the face of it, we accept.
My only negative, I wish we weren't known today like we were when I was in.
Yeah, I see.
I wish that the clandestines of them would remain clandestine because there's a danger that happens, and it happened to the Green Berets back in the 60s and 70s when the Green Berets of the Army got well known. They deteriorated some because of that. I think that sometimes you do better with the less publicity you have.
Yes, because then they can become targeted as well, and it certainly, it becomes more of a problem. Just another quick question I want to get in about the media. And this, of course, is a huge issue. And you've tackled the problem with the spin and the deception in the media by creating your own media, by creating your own television shows, but by constantly doing interviews. But one thing that's just been always been incredible watching you on mainstream, when you go on CNN, you go on one of these big shows, because you bring up very uncomfortable facts or inconsistencies with the mainstream view of certain events such as 9/11, and you bring them up in a context where nobody ever brings them up. And it's just always amazing to me to watch what happens. And I've seen it a few times, you know, where when you bring up these kind of subjects in one of those kind of morning shows on a big television network, and it just brings the house down. I mean, like, what is that like to be in the middle of that? Because they just really don't seem to know how to deal with it. That's what I've just noticed watching.
Well, what it's like is to face the condemnation that I'm facing now and the censorship. On my last book tour, the last book I wrote, I couldn't get on MSNBC. I couldn't get on Fox News. I couldn't get on any of the networks. And so what happens when you're like me is eventually they will start censoring you because you make them uncomfortable and you take them out of their comfort zone, and you're not sticking to party lines. You're not sticking to corporate lines. You're not sticking to what they're to talk about and what they're not to talk about. And I make them uncomfortable. I remember one time Piers Morgan off the air said to me, he said, you know, I wouldn't have you on anymore. But he said, and then he smiled and goes, but you're waiting, so you will be.
Yeah, it's a game that they have to play, isn't it? But, I think the ratings would go through the roof if certain things were exposed. I mean, if the inside information on the Kennedy assassination came out, that would be great ratings too, wouldn't it? But, you know.
But it can't. Let me explain to you why it can't.
Yeah.
Mainstream media will never admit that there was a conspiracy and a coup d'etat when John F. Kennedy was killed, and here's why. It's the crime of the century in the United States. It's the crime of last century.
Yeah.
The crime of the century. And they got it wrong. And for 50 years they got it wrong. You think they're going to admit to that? It will never, ever happen. I don't care what evidence comes forward. I don't care if they find a tape with a shooter from the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
And you watch the whole thing. Mainstream media will never come to terms and be honest to the American people because they won't. They admit that they blew the crime of the century. What credibility could they possibly have then?
Yeah. How about 9/11?
That's what you're dealing with here. That's what you're dealing with here.
And do you think there's any possibility that we're going to make any headway, any traction with getting some facts about 9/11 out, or are we in the same predicament?
No, it'll be the same thing. Whenever they form these government commissions, they are there simply to rubber stamp the government's conspiracy theory, and theirs is only a theory. Look at 9/11. Here's the theory that they sold us on 9/11. They told us that 19 Islamic radicals armed with box cutters defeated the United States multi-billion-dollar air defense system, all while conspiring with a bearded guy in a cave in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and that is regarded as
and they fully expect us to believe that one. That one's fully believable, according to them. I would like to know where did they come up with the box cutters? Because everybody died. How do they know that there were box cutters used?
Absolutely. And gee, there's a lot of questions about transponders, aren't there? And the issues with transponders and how they can just basically make a plane disappear appear to be, again, there appears to be a lack of general consensus on what the heck's going on with these jet airlines.
I don't know on this airliner. Again, I'm not going to comment on it. It seems to me that's why they have black boxes, so you can find them, you know.
Yeah.
And if they don't work, then we need to change the system and find something that does work, if that's indeed the case. But I'm off the grid. And
absolutely.
I can't comment. I know nothing more about this airplane. You know more about it than I do.
You know, all I know is that... As we've seen with previous mysterious events, is that quite often the explanations that are given seem incredibly inadequate, and a lot of people do get angry about it, and a lot of Chinese are very angry about it. They feel they've been lied to, you know.
Governments are notorious for that, because every big event like that that happens, it seems they're inadequate on giving us information now.
Yeah. So, you know, we can start speculating and theorizing, but then that just creates another set of maybe erroneous things that confuse and muddy the waters further. So I appreciate your reservations on that. It has been fantastic having you on. We're at the end of the hour. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Look forward to doing it again sometime. One of my favorite friends is Greg Norman the Shark. I play golf with him.
Oh, wow. That is fantastic. Well, look, I'll take you up on that, and I hope to speak to you again. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. That's Truth News Radio Australia signing out for another week. We'll see you next week.